Dennis Burton is our guest. He is a PhD doctor. He works in antibodies in the human body, and he thinks about viruses more generally. Take us back to Ebola and how Ebola is your work with Ebola has helped in thinking about these libraries of antibodies, if you would.
Okay, so what usually happens in Ebola infection is that the individual's infected, and then that a number of symptoms arise, and it can very rapidly lead to death.
Ebola. Talk about what happens when you die with Ebola.
Well, it produces a generalized organ failure, so there's massive failure of all the different organs and internal bleeding, and it's extremely unpleasant. The virus gets almost everywhere, and people die very quickly.
Nasty.
Not very pleasant, obviously. And so it's a people usually die before they have a chance to make any antibody response to the virus. However, some people do survive the infection. Something like of the order of about 20% of people, around about a quarter of people, do survive, and they do make some antibodies against different parts of the virus. However, they don't make very many antibodies that are referred to as neutralizing antibodies. Those are antibodies that really go after the virus. So we were interested to see if we could make such antibodies, primarily, well, for two reasons. One, the antibodies themselves could possibly be used to treat patients, possibly, but certainly if you had somebody who had just had an accidental exposure, which is a possibility in healthcare workers, you could give them the antibody to try and stop the virus getting a hold. But more importantly than anything, it would help us to think about vaccines, because if we have the right sorts of antibodies, then we know those are what we would like to get a vaccine to elicit in the human body. So it's a kind of a marker, a teaching tool for us of what we need to make.
So do I understand you correctly that if you can understand how this works with Ebola, you might be able to understand how it works with other diseases?
No. In this case, we're working particularly with Ebola. We do actually do quite a lot of work with HIV, in fact, more work with HIVs. But this is really a very challenging virus, and a virus where the antibody response appears to be particularly poor. And the question to us is, can we at least make some antibodies and try and find ways to get those antibodies by using a vaccine? So we want to increase our knowledge base. So what happened was there was an outbreak in Kikwit in Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo, in 1995. And some of our colleagues from the CDC, Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, obtained samples for us, actually bone marrow samples, from survivors of the Kikwit outbreak. And in that bone marrow, which they took and dropped into a solution, and then it took quite some time to actually get back to the United States, but that sample contained the genetic information for the antibodies that were made by those survivors. And so the material came back to the United States, and we processed it, and we made from it libraries, these antibody libraries. So now we could now go back and make the very antibodies that those people in Kikwit had made against the virus during their convalescent period. And so that's what we've done, and we've made an antibody that it turns out is very good has very good antiviral activity in the test tube, if you like. And in fact, now we've shown that antibody can, colleagues in the U.S. Army, we've shown that antibody can protect small animals against Ebola virus. So,
have you tried it with humans yet?
It's not been. It would be done with monkeys. That would be the next.
And you haven't had the kind of catastrophe that would make it. Well, we got to try it now.
No. It's not really at that it would need more work on it anyway. But it's interesting because it establishes for us that, you know, there are such good antibodies that can be made. They're not made very often. And this goes back to what we were talking about at the start, that the natural infection doesn't seem to elicit or create very many of these antibodies, but which is why possibly the typical older type of vaccine may have some problems here. But, you know, with the new information, we may be able to get smarter and to design things that would elicit this sort of an antibody and hopefully be more protective.
As you talk about this, creating libraries and the things you do, it sounds fairly straightforward. But I have a sense that if I were to try this on my home chemistry set, I would have less success than you've been able to have. Presumably, there are a lot of smart people using some very sophisticated equipment that are required to develop these libraries and all that goes around.
Yeah, it's not so much equipment; it's just using a variety of different techniques that are the result of work of literally hundreds of people. So the whole science base, the whole base of knowledge, increases, and then at a certain point, there's a little leap forward in a given area, and the ability to make these antibodies like this was the result of all sorts of different advances, but one or two in particular, and one was this technique which is called PCR, and it doesn't matter, but basically it's the ability to amplify very, very small amounts of DNA, which, you know, is famous for, you know, being used in criminal trials and so on and so on. And that sort of technology, because the amounts of DNA that are very small in the samples that we get, in previous times, we wouldn't have been able to rescue the antibody genes because there's, you know, so literally small. Millions of them, and it's only a little bit for each one. But the fact that you have that advance then allows, you know, it comes in all sorts of different areas, and that's why I think it's so important to increase the knowledge base all the time, because you can't really predict where things are going to be helped, but they are. You always go forward.
I don't want to make this too simple, but I want to understand it. It sounds like there is a tool set that has been developed. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people, different approaches, different ways that you can go about puzzling out what's going on, you know, extracting what you want to extract. And the challenge would be to know what all the tools are in the set and know how those are used,
right?
And then find the right one for that particular circumstance.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty close. And the tool set is constantly increasing, so the possibilities are constantly increasing.
And does this not then build on itself, that as you're doing the work with this tool set, you've developed new tools with
Absolutely. Which to? Absolutely. That is also true. There's a constant positive feedback in the whole scientific endeavor.
I would think that just managing that knowledge base would be extraordinarily difficult. You know, the individuals involved collecting the information and then having it available in a fashion that it is accessible to other people who don't have that specific expertise.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. And, you know, increasingly in science there are a lot of people who interact across disciplines, and that's, you know, clearly necessary in order to...
For instance, what kind of disciplines?
To keep going. For myself, I mean, I was originally a chemist, trained as a chemist. I've done protein chemistry, working with proteins, and then learned all about DNA and molecular biology, which is... completely different, and have also used all sorts of sort of biophysical techniques, all of which, you know, end up in the pot when you're thinking about something. But that's for me. But in currently there are all sorts of new exciting advances coming because people are putting all sorts of bits of DNA on chips, so you're having a lot of very smart chip technologies coming into biology, and the marriage of these two, of biology and information technology and chip technology, is producing all sorts of new and exciting possibilities.
You mentioned chip technology, and in this era of computers and the hyping of computers and large-scale computers, You know, reflexively, you would think in terms of data processing, information processing, that somehow or other you could create a database. And, you know, when you have a question, you sit down at your terminal and you type in, you know, a natural language inquiry, and it pops out at you.
Right.
Again, I don't think it's that simple.
No, it's not. And a lot of the times you don't even know the questions to ask. You know, you have to sort of do a lot of work in order to actually find out what is the real question.
I think the word was thinking, wasn't it?
Yes, that's true. That's still important.
This is Dennis Burton. We're going to be the beneficiaries of his thinking when we return in just a moment. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell's with me. We're all three in Taos, New Mexico. We hope you'll be with us when we return.